I would love to welcome everyone to another recording of the Celebrated Talk Show podcast, recorded on the day of our Lord, March 245th of 2020, the 245th day of March in 2020. My name is Josh Withers, and joining me is, as always, the celebrant I just can't get rid of, Sarah Ed.
It's true. Yeah, I'm just hanging around.
I've got fond memories of the 245th day of March every year. Just as it rolls around, start getting that feeling. Like, you see Americans talking about Thanksgiving. Like, you know, you start seeing Christmas things and this, oh, God, it's going to be the 250th of March soon, and things just start kind of rolling around. It's exciting, hey?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's the cray. I saw my first set of Christmas decorations in the wild this morning.
Wow, like at someone's house.
No, like at shops.
Right, okay.
Because now, they've probably been in shops in Queensland for a long time, but because the shops haven't been open here, they only just opened again on Wednesday, the shops didn't bother to put up their Christmas decorations yet. But I went down to the local, like where the supermarket is, and Christmas decorations. Actually, what I mainly saw was a massive, like, nativity scene. Massive nativity scene. Could not see anything else around the place, but then I found a little spray of tinsel. So I don't know what that says about the owners of that shopping center, if that is reflective of their views on the importance of secular Christmas versus the importance of religious Christmas.
Do you think the tinsel was like an acknowledgement that there's a secular, a civil Christmas, or
quite possibly,
or is it like maybe they're still rolling out? Like, if there's one thing I hate, because I'm not a good cook. I desperately wish I was. Wow, like I wish I could just become a cook. Like I'm not willing to do the hard work to become a good cook, but I'm not.
I hear you.
I hate it when people come into like the kitchen while I'm cooking, because that's a thing you do, like, with normal people that are cooking. Like, you know, normal humans that know what to do in the kitchen. It's very normal for other people to be allowed in the kitchen to see the process, have a taste, whatever. Me, like, don't come in the kitchen. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm stressing out. There's a bit of tinsel on the ground. There's a newborn Jesus over there, and I don't know what's going on.
So, yes, that was my Christmas is here. On Halloween in Melbourne, so it has arrived. The Department of Health and Human Services released some guidelines about trick-or-treating the other day for Melbourne, because, of course, obviously we've only just come out of lockdown.
Yeah.
And basically the guidelines said you can go trick-or-treating, but you can't enter someone's front yard or knock on their door.
Which is, honestly, that's how I like my trick-or-treating. That's like, I know some people call that COVID safe. That's my Josh safe plan. Just don't, like, do your thing, just not in my front yard.
Not here.
Or at my front door.
Yeah, go away from here.
In fact, I really feel like they should have credited me for that plan. Just, we've repurposed Josh's Halloween plan.
And so I'm not sure if they think the plan is that people are going to, like, hang out at the end of their driveway with, like, a bowl of candy. Anyway, Halloween doesn't impact me. People don't come to my apartment block. It's fine. I don't have children, so I don't need to worry about it. But I did think that was a bit hilarious from
Can VHS. I talk to you about Halloween? Because obviously we're recording this on the good Lord's holiday, Halloween. I don't understand it. Like it's not even – like, I'm not stupid, you know. I'm 38 years old. I've seen Halloween. I've done Halloween weddings. You know, like I see the dates in the calendar, but I don't understand it enough to dislike it. But I don't understand it enough to like it. I feel very whelmed by Halloween.
Sure.
Like there was a grown man at the park next to the polling booth today, because in Queensland we voted, and in the polling booth, it's a sort of community centre, and there's a park, and Luna wanted to play in the park, and there was like a grown man, like a good looking grown man, like he seemed like the kind of guy that had three kids, you know, he had a three kid vibe, and like he was like in full skeleton outfit, but it was just like a size too small for him, because like where do you get skeleton outfits? Yeah, it's hard to come by. And so it was like popping apart at the back, and like he was like,
no.
As much as he was clothed in a skeleton outfit, he was also nude.
Yeah. No. That's... Nope.
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to have Halloween when I was a child because my mum said, it's an American thing. We don't do that here.
Yeah,
my next door neighbours had lived in America, though, for a short period of time. So they got to go trick-or-treating and I did not. And I, of course, you know, much of our television was American and this distressed me quite a lot. Now, as I get older, I get it. It seemed like mum was never good at costumes. So this was probably her excuse to not have to make any more costumes than she already had to make.
That's a real thing. As a parent, like a lot of the rules and the boundaries you construct are not usually like, you know, kind of wholesome, like many of them are for the child's good. Like I want you to be a healthy, wholesome, awesome child. A lot of them is like, I have weaknesses as a parent and I'm going to barricade around those. Kind of like, you know, as climate change impacts New York, they're talking about putting like a 30-foot wall around New York. So instead of dealing with climate change, we'll put a wall around New York.
Sure.
Around my insecurities and my weaknesses. That's great. Child change impacts me, as the child warming.
Okay, so we're now 7 minutes in, and if you've just stumbled upon this, you would have no idea that we actually talk about celibacy on this show.
Oh, we do
that
talk about celibacy.
That is why we're here.
Right.
We probably should try and do a bit of that before we lose all of our listeners.
Okay.
We don't really care what you think about Halloween, Sarah.
Well, I've got a plan for the podcast, Sarah.
Sure.
There's the social media challenge we're doing at the Celebrant Institute, which I want to talk about. I know a lot of celebrants are struggling with it's not so much celebrants are struggling with, but just the wedding industry is in generally affected by COVID. And there's one aspect of that where celebrants can either be asked to help or can help, and there's varying levels of that, and that's in regards to live streaming ceremonies. And I want to hit on that. And also, you and I went to, some people would say it's the Halloween of the celebrant industry. Is the quarterly, the biannually biannual celebrant association meeting with the Attorney General's office and the marriage law and celebrant section. So how about we hit that? How about we have our own little Halloween here on the podcast and celebrate what was the celebrant association meeting? Sound good?
Sounds great. Yeah.
Okay, good, good.
For those of you who don't know, Josh and I have a seat at the table with the Attorney General's department meeting with celebrant associations and networks through our creation of the Celebrant Institute. Because, you know, we have like 300 celebrants who have joined the Institute and are part of our network. So we are lucky enough to be able to represent them at these biannual meetings. Usually the meetings are held in Canberra. Obviously with COVID, it's just not possible for all of us to travel from around the country at the moment. So this year they've been held by teleconference. And the October meeting was held on Tuesday, the 27th of October at 12 o'clock. And there was quite a lot that came out of not just the meeting, but the kind of email that came a few days before saying, hey, we're having a meeting. Here's your papers. So I just wanted to kind of give a vague overview of what was discussed and what all that paperwork was kind of all about. Because, you know, I think it's the whole purpose of this is of these meetings is so that the AGD doesn't have to talk to every celebrant. They can talk to owners of networks and associations who can then go and spread the word to their people. So here we are spreading the word to our people. So,
hear ye.
So the most important thing for me that came out of this kind of meeting and the paperwork that came out was the new forms. We're finally getting the new forms. They only started talking about them in January 2015, but, you know, that's okay. So the new forms, we're looking at hopefully having them ready to go and launched by the 1st of July next year. And there will actually be no transition period. So basically from the 1st of July, you'll have to start using the new NOIM Declaration of No Legal Impediment and Official Certificate of Marriage. The NOIMs you've already signed are still valid for their 18 months. That's fine. They don't become invalid. But going forward from that date, if that ends up being the date, you'll have to use the new stuff.
There's like an asterisk that it could change.
Absolutely. And so, yeah. But basically, we have drafts of the new forms and they're pretty good, to be honest. I'm pretty happy with them. They have put back all the stuff that was taken out in the last round where they tried to take out things like parents' names and occupation and address because family historians had quite a lot to say about that. So they put all that stuff back, but they've still removed the rubbish like children of previous marriages. They've even removed like stuff about marriages before the last one, which is really great. So
a number of years, how lucky that you've been a resident of the country, they've taken that out.
Yep, taken the residence, period of residence out. So the new forms are really good. The current way that it is, that they're set out looks quite nice. It's a totally new format. It has check boxes, which is really cool. So instead of having to write never validly married, you just tick a box.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love a tick
big
box.
Big note on that. Helvetica font. Big fan.
Excellent. Loving it.
Do you know fonts? Are you a font? I thought you would have been a font person.
I am. Of course I'm a font nerd, but okay. I have to admit I haven't really looked closely at the font of the form because I was more worried about certain other things.
Fonts are important.
So the paperwork looks cool and Craig Moran from Australian Marriage Celebrants and a couple of other people have invited me to potentially be part of a small group working on kind of the outline of the forms because at the moment the new notice of intended marriage goes to 4.5 pages, and which is annoying because it's another half a page you've got to print. And there's quite a lot of kind of space that could be sorted out. Like the title notice of intended marriage is quite big. Could just be a bit smaller and that would save some space. So hopefully we're not looking at changing the content, but we'll be able to lay it out a bit better so that it can fit on those four pages as it always has done. That's kind of the plan. So, yeah, it's cool. I can't show them to you yet. They're under embargo, but the plan is that when everyone's kind of happy with the look and feel of them, that they will be released on the AGD website with a big like draft embargo, do not use kind of watermark all over them so that celebrants can get used to what they look like before they have to start using them on whatever date we go live. The reason there's a bit of a delay, because the original plan was to have them ready for the 1st of January. The reason there's a bit of a delay is because the BDMs that have online registration systems have asked for a bit more time because obviously the next couple of months it's wedding season and we'll be pretty busy and they won't have the resources to update those systems until sort of March, April, June, May next year. So that's kind of why there's a delay. But rest assured, they look pretty good. I think they're going to be much more user-friendly and easier for us, easier for the couple, no rubbish information that nobody needs. So yay, thumbs up for the new forms.
Thumbs up. The four pages thing is a little bit much. It doesn't bother me as so much because almost 100% of my paperwork is digital, like at least in creation and signing. There's the odd chance where that isn't, but generally everything for me is just I create the PDF, export it to Notability, and we sign on the iPad. And then where you can, I submit electronically. Where you can't, you print and send in. It's a bit annoying, particularly if you live in like WA, Northern Territory. Oh wow, so WA, Northern Territory, and South Australia, are they the only places left without a digital, an online BDM now? Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ACT doesn't actually have an online system, but you can email your documents. Yeah.
Yeah. Those of you that missed it, there's an article about that on the Celebrant Institute because Sean asked how. And I'm like, oh, this isn't documented anywhere, not on the ACT BDM website. Yeah, it's not. So I just contacted the guys and was like, how do we do it? And he's like, oh, just email it here. So yeah. So there's an article on the Celebrant Institute about that.
And we also have a special podcast recording that we did with a Tassie celebrant about the new Tassie online BDM system. So definitely check those out if you haven't done so already.
I've signed up on the Tassie BDM as well. If you're not a Tasmanian resident, the Tassie BDM didn't think any non-Tasmanian residents would register. So, like, so when you get a register, it's, I think it asks you for maybe a celebrant registration number and your last name from memory. And obviously it's looking up in a, like a pre-registration database, like, oh, Josh is coming. Yeah, cool. Let him in. So, but anyway, they didn't load in all celebrants. They just loaded in Tasmanian, resident celebrants. And, so I had to get special permission for the Tasmanian BDM to be on there.
Of course, you did.
Hilarious. Yeah. So you just
you weren't on the guest list. No, you weren't on the guest list, Josh.
Story of my life, Sarah.
So that was the forms. That was really cool because we have been waiting for them for a long time. So I'm really pleased that, and you know, they're things like parent one and parent two instead of mother and father. Parent two, it says, if relevant, because it's acknowledging that not everybody has two parents. There's just some really cool stuff in there like that, which is just making them a bit more inclusive and more user-friendly in general.
Yeah, that's good.
So then the other big discussions were about OPD. There was first a discussion about OPD in 2021. There was an email that went out to all celebrants a few weeks ago explaining what that's going to look like. Basically, there will be a one-hour free activity that is provided through the Marriage Celebrant portal, which is where you can log in to get your invoice and pay it and those sorts of things. And that will be a compulsory topic that every celebrant will need to do. And then the other 4 hours will be provided by one of the current contracted OPD providers. So the Gordon TAFE, Life Skills Training, Australian Celebrations Training and Qualtrain.
Who do you recommend for that? Like what's your inside word on an OPD provider?
I mean, I hear that Life Skills Training is not too bad. So, you know, maybe you could head over there if you were interested. So Josh and I are currently working on plans for OPD for our 4 hours that we need to provide for you for next year, which is going to be cool. So we've got, you know, some big plans and some big ideas and we're excited about the kinds of topics that we can do and the kinds of flexibility that we can bring to the system. So
Is it worth me kind of recounting? I did that social media post from Life Skills Training the other day about 2021. It's just a bit of a teaser. I might just repeat it back in the podcast because I'm kind of proud. Like we're not revealing all the plans because they're kind of cool. And to be blatantly honest, if we drop them on now, I'm pretty sure everyone else will copy us. So... So we'll wait and but here's what was said about 2020 OPD, 2021 OPD with life skills training. So number one, OPD with life skills training will be different through the year as the seasons change. So will OPD. So OPD is going to change through the year with the life skills training next year. Number two, you'll spend 1 hour less with us, as we were just saying. And I want to talk about the 1 hour with the portal. I think there's a conversation there. So you'll only do 4 hours with your OPD RTO. You'll do 1 hour kind of with the marriage celebrant section. Number three, choosing your OPD session will be a lot more like booking a flight, if you remember how to do those things. It's, we've actually
nobody remembers how to do that. Yeah, nobody remembers.
It'll be like...
It's maybe not a good analogy.
It'd be like booking Uber Eats.
Okay, sure. Yep, that works.
We'll see. Okay. We've got something really sexy happening on there. And look, I feel like talking about business things as sexy is weird, but it's kind of sexy. Yeah. Okay, number four, OPD in 2021 will put more money back in your pocket because Sarah and I were just saying we've got too much money, so we need to get rid of some of that. I think you were saying that. Yeah.
Yeah,
Number five and final, OPD with life skills training in 2021, as public safety guidelines allow, will be back face-to-face, but it's also going to be online. So where
Absolutely. Where
everything can allow, we want to do it face-to-face. Like that's the OG, it's good, it's fun. But also we're going to be putting just as much work on the online OPD. And so there's going to be options. I've had a lot of people talk about OPD through Zoom doing webinars, that it's been cool. They've got to meet celebrants from around the country. It's been more accessible for them because maybe they're a parent or maybe whatever it is, and they're kind of at home. And just doing OPD on Zoom is more accessible for them, and it's good. A lot of people just love to kind of get out of the house and actually see someone, which is like, it's kind of nice about doing face-to-face OPD. You don't really have like an office. You don't have colleagues per se as a single, celebrant kind of operation. So it's nice to get out and see people face-to-face and kind of as I'm sure we'll all be doing when we come back to face-to-face, we'll be kind of like touching each other's face and kind of rubbing just for human connection. Like,
no,
I need human connection.
No, Let me put my
I've been putting my fingers in everyone's mouths because I'm craving that much human connection. That's what I do now. People are weirded out by it, but I'm really pushing that forward. No, people are cool with it. It's good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we have to wear masks in Melbourne, so there's no putting your fingers in other people's mouths when you're out and about in Melbourne.
I do ears. I'm an ear guy in Melbourne.
Okay, ears, yep, sure. Okay, I think we just lost 80% of our audience, so I'm very sorry to those of you who are still here.
I'll win
Josh
them back
does
over
not
with
really
just a little ear rub.
Fingers
just
in people's
come
mouths.
Close to Josh.
Stop.
Okay, come back to earth.
I just would like everybody to know, if you're listening to this podcast later, it's 1:42 and it's 12:42 in Queensland on Saturday the 31st of October. It's not like 10 o'clock at night and Josh is drunk or something. This is just normal. This is what Josh is like, if you didn't know that. So, yeah. Anyway, moving right along. Okay. You wanted to talk about – so, yeah, we're going to do face-to-face – webinars, and we'll still have distance workbooks as well. So we'll have all the things where we can. Yeah. But you wanted to talk about the 1 hour portal.
Yeah,
activity.
Yeah. I reckon it's going to be the crowning disaster of 2021. Because 2020's had a lot going on. And I think 2021, I reckon everyone from ScoMo down, we're all going to be talking about the disaster that is doing OPD through the marriage celebrants portal. It's a joke. There's going to be 9,000 odd celebrants that are going to have to log onto the portal. I'm willing to bet at least 8,000 of them haven't touched the portal in a long time. Like,
I think that's a fair bet.
And they probably haven't got the password. Like, even me, like, I had two passwords saved in my password manager because when did they change address for the portal a year or two back?
They did.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's I just don't think they've been setting themselves up for a win with the portal. Now, have you attempted to do this year's online?
Yes.
Yeah. How did you find it?
Because let's remember that I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
So, and when they announced that this was going to be compulsory next year, I thought I better go and do this year's topic and see how it worked. So basically, this year's topic is, and it's going to be the same next year, it's 25 multiple choice questions. There is no content delivery. It's purely assessment. But I guess their idea is that by asking questions about tricky scenarios or tricky situations, celebrants will go and have to look up the answers. So therefore, they'll learn something, is the hope. And basically, the way it works is you answer the 25 questions and then it says to you, yes, you got them all right, which I did the first time because I'm a nerd, or, hey, you got this one wrong, but you've got like four more attempts to get it right. So, or three attempts. So, you do actually get to choose each of the multiple choice options until you get the right one, because there's four options and you get four tries. So, there's an element of guesswork there. But, yeah. And so then it says, hey, you're done. And it spits out it says you can download a receipt, essentially. It's not a certificate. I certainly wouldn't call it a certificate. It's a thing that you can download. So I was interested to hear, though, that in the, 9 months that it's been available, 600 celebrants, less than 10% of all celebrants have actually done this free activity that is available.
What was the number? There was like a 240 number or something. That did they complete it correctly the
when
first
they
time?
Originally... I don't think she told us that. I think she said she didn't have access to that information.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But when they originally sent the email out, they said like 300 people had done it. And then at the meeting, they said like 600 people have done it. So, but still, that's not very many.
No, it's not very many.
It's not very many at all.
So first round for me, I actually got a question wrong, which I felt so offended by. Like, I know marriage things. The reason I think it's going to be a disaster is because it's not the simplest and most user friendly system. I figured it out, but like I'm a web nerd. And it was still, like, I remember looking at it thinking, it's not as user-friendly as you might have hoped. It's compulsory. The only way you can do it is online. The, as of recording, they're not doing it over paper. They're not doing it over the phone. At the association's meeting, I think Craig brought up maybe doing it over the phone. Yeah. Someone brought up doing it over the phone, which for those that don't have internet access, I could imagine that being a good thing, but I could also imagine a lot of people just calling. I can imagine that system being a little bit abused, just because the online system wasn't super user friendly.
Look, it's not. Yeah. And the reason they don't want to do it, the reason they're saying that they don't want to make it available offline is because it's 25 randomly selected multiple choice questions from, and that, like, their bank, I imagine their bank of questions would have hundreds of questions in it. If they're using the bank that used to be used for the application to become a celebrant, that had 500 questions in it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, potentially, they could be using that bank of questions, and then it's 25 randomly generated. And also, of course, because it's online, it marks itself. So, like, they've told the computer B is the correct answer for whichever question. So, that means the resources in terms of the Attorney General's Department resources are almost zero. And that's why they are saying they don't want to offer it offline. But they're... There are 60 celebrants who do not have a registered email address, so they know that they need to do something for those celebrants. And there are also celebrants who just don't have access to a strong enough internet connection to sit on an internet quiz for an hour. So that's kind of the where there's the discussion about how we can make this happen for other people.
I'm so fascinated. Like, it seems like a weird fantasy to just not have email.
I know.
It seems like part of me wants to experiment that. Like, it sounds like some kind of cool retreat I could go to on Byron Bay. Like, come to Byron Bay email retreat where we delete your email. And we just.
But you do have to remember that a lot of celebrants are not 38.
Wow. Wow, little Miss PC over here.
Like, there are a lot of, well, no, but I mean, I got my first email address at school, yeah? We all got an email address at school. There are a lot of celebrants for whom email wasn't introduced while they were at a place that they have needed it.
Yeah.
So, like, it does feel really odd to me as a, you know, whatever I am. What am I? Gen X? Who, like, email is such a... integral part of my communication strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I get it that there are people who don't have it. And I get that there are people who just don't have strong enough internet connections. Again, I think that's quite frankly appalling in Australia in 2020, there are people out there who don't have a strong enough internet connection because they live in a rural or regional area, or even because they live in a part of Sydney. There are even people in Sydney who have to, like, walk to the top of their driveway to send an email. I mean, it's that... Just I find that extraordinary. It's going to be interesting to see what they come up with to kind of deal with that. There was a suggestion that in order to make sure that any kind of offline system is not abused, that you would have to apply to be able to do it offline and say why you are unable to do it through the portal. But who knows? We just kind of have to wait and see on that one.
So, here's my forecast that they're going to get to, I don't know when, like September, October, November 2021, and see that a fairly solid population, portion of the population hasn't done that 1 hour. And either they're going to correct for that, and I don't know how. I know in the association's meeting, I suggested that there could be an opportunity for RTOs to deliver that hour, and they didn't seem too keen on that because obviously RTOs don't know how to deliver OPD, like, obviously.
Clearly not.
If they don't correct for that, there's going to be a mass deregistration of celebrants at the end of 2021. Yeah.
Well, no, they don't. They don't generally deregister you for not doing OPD. They might just make extra OPD the next year.
I'm thinking of non-payment.
It's not the same as non-payment. So they might make you do extra next year, but that's actually not going to help if now you've got to do 2 hours on the portal when you couldn't do one. But they are saying to, like, associations who run conferences and things like that, hey, have a session where you're connected to your
Wi-Fi,
your venue Wi-Fi, and people can bring along their iPads or their phones and they can do it using the venue Wi-Fi. That might be a way to get some other people involved. But anyway, yeah, we just have to wait and see a little bit with that one. So that was the big discussion about 2021. And then there was a big discussion about OPD from 2022 onwards, because the plan since last year has been to change OPD dramatically to decrease the amount of resource intensiveness that it takes up in the Marriage, Law and Celebrants section of the Attorney General's Department. So there was some discussion about
that celebrants fund that we look after. That's
Well, and then the hope is that, like, it does say in the discussion paper they released that if OPD was decreased and therefore there was less work, then the fee would be less.
And as I argued, I think that if they that going down the route will actually increase their workload and increase the cost of celebrants, because they're going to have a lot more questions and a lot more complaints and a lot more issues with celebrants. But yeah, that's just me.
Yeah. So basically, the Attorney General's Department has written a discussion paper about OPD, setting out three options for OPD going forward from 2022. It includes both the AGD's kind of preferred option, which is dropping OPD to one compulsory hour per year delivered through the portal, and that's it. And then celebrants are free to go out and do their own additional professional development if they feel they need it, but it's not mandated. They can get it from wherever they want. They can do whatever they want for it. Another option, which involved doing an hour through the portal, 4 hours with the RTOs, but that the RTOs would not be allowed to deliver any legal topics, because the AGD says they spend a lot of time correcting the materials that the RTOs are writing for the OPD legal topics.
Mind fucking blowing.
Yeah. But I'm trying not to say anything about that until I write my own materials and see if they actually get through the process, because maybe they look at different things than I would. Anyway, and then, of course, another option C in this paper kind of canvasses a number of different options that associations have raised, including that we would have to do 5 hours, but that it could be sourced from anywhere. So you could go to a marketing conference, or you could do a first aid course, or you could do a certain amount of reading or whatever it was, and that would count. It canvasses options like the ones Josh and I recommended last year, which is things like a minimum number of ceremonies per year, or a legal test that you had to pass every year to maintain your registration. The AGD doesn't like either of those options, but they're in the discussion paper anyway, because they want to get feedback on them. So basically, we've seen this draft discussion paper that they've put together, which is quite comprehensive and takes you through all the background and why we do OPD and where it came from and all those kinds of things, and the fact that the AGD doesn't see that OPD is effective right now. So basically what they're saying is you have to do 5 hours of mandated OPD, yet we are still getting, the AGD is still getting thousands of emails and phone calls every year asking us questions about your legal obligations. So therefore, OPD must not be effective. I think that's a really long bow to draw, because I kind of go, like, adult learning needs lots of different approaches, and some people might just pick up one thing from their annual OPD, and then next year they might pick up a different thing. So that bothered me a little bit. They are also talking about how a lot of the OPD content duplicates information that is delivered in the Cert 4, therefore it shouldn't have to be delivered every year. Well, again, everybody needs to keep their skills up. That's like a surgeon needs to do a certain number of hours of surgery per year. Just because they're doing things that they learnt in their medical degree doesn't mean they don't need to redo them or be retaught them, or, you know, have more information coming about them. So, yeah, so there's a bunch of options. They're going to get some feedback from the associations on the paper, and then they're going to release it to the general celebrant population and, you know, any other stakeholders. It'll be released in December, and we'll have until, I think she said, like, late January to put forward any feedback to the options paper, and then they'll start to design what OPD is going to look like from 2022 onwards. So, you know, this will be your opportunity, if you've got something to say about OPD in the future. When that options paper comes out, that's your opportunity to say something about it. And I just would like to remind people that if you don't take the opportunity to say something when you are given the chance, please don't complain about it when you don't like it later.
I've got two things to say as to help people attack that paper, because my deep encouragement is to every person that can hear our voice right now, watching our Facebook, listening to the podcast. If you're a member of the Celebrant Institute, even if you're just a celebrant, please take an interest in your profession and to take the opportunities to have a say when you get a chance to have a say, because it's like that. It's just how the world works. And because I've got a thought that I think a deep problem with the celebrant program actually has nothing to do with the celebrant program, with OPD, marriage law, celebrant section, marriage law guidelines. It's got nothing to do with that. It's actually a deep misunderstanding, which has really been exposed this year, 2020, that so many Australians, we just don't know how the world and government and how we work. You know, like how many people knew that there could be state borders? Like, yeah, you know, I've lived near one most of my life. Never knew it could, like, yeah, we know it's a border. We know that the time changes when we go over it. How I hate daylight savings. But none of us identified that as a state border that would actually mean something.
Mean that you couldn't go over it. Yeah.
Exactly. And like how many of us didn't know that ScoMo was completely, you know, blunt in that fight? Like he's got no nasal, he can have all the opinions in the world, means bloody nothing. and so coming back to the celebrants program, I don't think a lot of people, like even celebrants who have received a letter saying you are an authorized marriage celebrant, we don't really know what that means. And like, what is my position in regards to the Commonwealth of Australia, to Australian citizens, you know, because we still get questions about migration and that kind of thing. Like, know your lane and stick in it, but know your lane. So many of us don't know our lane and what our authority is. And I'll tell you straight up, if you never became a member of a celebrant association, if you never read a Celebrant Institute blog post, if you never listened to this podcast, you are a fine and awesome marriage celebrant if you know the marriage law, know the marriage guidelines, and just do your bloody thing. Like, OPD should professionally develop you, but OPD generally, well, no, I'm going to say OPD shouldn't be bringing you new information. Like, it should already be in the guidelines. It should already be in the marriage law. Obviously there's fact sheets that come out.
There's things that change. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fundamental stuff, you know, like just if I hear another celebrant say that a norm is due 30 days before a wedding, I'm probably going to buy a gun and use it. Like, just it's there. Like, it's not some secret knowledge. Like, it isn't like you, the oracle, like, let me reveal to you my secrets, children, come unto me. Like, it's not, it's not like that. Like, we are appointed Commonwealth marriage celebrants by the federal government. We are appointed by law to marry people according to the law in Australia. And that law is not some secret law that you have to have a secret membership to access, or you have to know the password to the website. Like, it's public. Like, you can just Google it. It is there. And you read that. And what that says is what you can do. And if it's not in there, you can't do it. You know, it's... And so I think that's the real issue with the celebrant program, is just so many Australians don't really have a fundamental understanding of like how our nation works, how the states work, and our relationship to those things. It's not really in the scope or the charter of the marriage celebrants program to kind of communicate that. But that's their problem, not that. Because there may well have been RTOs, like, well, I know for a fact there's been RTOs that have taught wrong information, stupid stuff. Those guys should go to the slaughterhouse. You know, there's been OPD trainers that have said wrong things. Those guys should also join them at the slaughterhouse. But I don't think that's a majority issue. I think that's a minority issue. The majority issue is we don't really understand who we are as a celebrant.
It's a good point. That was a lot. You feeling okay?
That's my case, Your Honor.
Yeah. Look, it. I think it's a really kind of interesting point that you know, there do seem to be a lot of celebrants around who don't necessarily know, you know, some of the basics of what we do. I don't know if that's about training. I don't know if it's about not having access to the right materials. I don't really know, and I don't know what the answer is. But I do know that the answer is not removing one opportunity that celebrants have every year to go and be with a person who is presumably an expert in the trainer and other celebrants to ask questions and to workshop the way they do things and to just go, hey, I do it this way. Is that right? Or like, is that, how do you do it? Like, I'd be really interested to hear, you know, what do you do? And so I don't think removing that opportunity is going to help us be better.
No.
So, yeah, it does worry me quite a lot that we're kind of thinking about dropping OPD. I mean, I've been saying that since it was first canvassed last year, that it worries me a lot that we might drop OPD, particularly now that the marriage law test has been removed from the application process to become a celebrant. Yeah, so as long as you can get your Cert 4 and as long as you don't have a criminal history of crimes that could lead to a jail sentence and you can fill in your application form, you pretty much get appointed. There's no kind of gatekeeping at all. And look, there are many different thoughts about that. I have many thoughts about that. But, you know, I think that, removing OPD is not going to help us get better as an entire kind of industry. Yeah, I think there's always opportunities to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
And to get better and to, things change a lot. So it's good to be able to have the opportunity to discuss things that have changed with other people. It's good to be reminded of our obligations. It's good to just have those opportunities to discuss things. So yeah. That's my.
I am worried for the. Essentially, it's a deregulation of the marriage celebrant program. And I'm like fundamentally like I don't know. I don't want to get political. That is as progressive and as I want everyone to have a good life. Kind of politically person I am. I probably do lean towards small government. Like I know in my heart, and that's what the Liberal Party and as they call it, the current government has a how do they word it, like a removing red tape policy. I think is that the right wording?
A deregulation policy.
A deregulation policy. So I see the merit in that. I really do, but I just think it has to be measured and thought out because particularly for those of us that currently are celebrants and I can talk on your behalf, I'm sure that, and I, like we have such a heart for excellence in the marriage celebrancy program. And part of me sees that as an opportunity. Like, well, if I could be excellent, then maybe if there's a highlight, if someone's saying, oh, do we get Josh or do we get person X? You know, I can see that Josh is more focus on excellence and prop doing things correctly and well. So we might hire him, maybe. But I don't want to see my celebrant population filled with people that I just want to become a celebrant. I'm just going to become a celebrant. I just don't care. And I'm like that would pain me so much. But I also
think that we should see that if you can be excellent, then everyone else can be excellent too.
Yeah.
And we should all be propping each other up and making the industry better as a whole.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether you're a person who does 100 weddings a year or a person who does one wedding a year, everybody should want to be excellent at what they do.
Yeah, so, that's a deep belief of mine. Like we recently kind of like had a friend break up with someone, and one element of that was that they just didn't really. I realized that they didn't care about their profession. And it was a profession that I'm not in, but I care about. And I just found that it really challenged me as a person. I'm like, oh, you've got a really important job and you just don't care. Like, that kind of doesn't make sense to my mind. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of weird. And look, I really do think the celebrant population needs to be more excellent. Like you and I have been talking about a Noim that I received recently, which I didn't actually receive a Noim. I just received a printout from the BDM online. And I'm like, that's not a Noim, darling.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. The paperwork's going to come out. I'm sure that when it comes out, you and I will record a new podcast. And we'll
absolutely
share our more direct thoughts on that. But
yeah. And just ask people to just have your say. Like if you have, even if what you have to say is one sentence long, please say it. I think that's really important, you know, that because they base decisions on what we say. A lot of decisions like that big survey that happened last year, less than a quarter of celebrants responded to it. And they are basing, like they have decided that, okay, maybe the survey was a bit flawed and maybe they shouldn't base all the decisions on it. But, you know, they do base their decisions on you know, when they give us the opportunity to say something, they base their decisions on what we say.
Well, what it simply means in a really simple practice is like this happened in the association meeting. They say 51% of celebrants say this. I'm like, oh, no. Like 51% of the, 2,000 celebrants said that. There's 8,000 celebrants not at all represented in that. But that's how surveys work. And so if you don't have a say, you're forfeiting your opportunity to be a part of the percentage because they don't say 1,000 of the 8,000 celebrants won this. They say 51%.
Yeah, totally.
Because that's a better story to tell. You know, like that's a... Yeah. If you're trying to argue a point, that's a great story, you know. Like,
yeah,
you know, I can say that 50% of this podcast hosts want to raise Sarah.
And look, I must also acknowledge that, 25% response rate to a survey is excellent. When you work in, I have a psychology degree and like 10% response rate is excellent. So like 25% is an amazing response rate, but it's still not everyone. And the more people respond, the better chance we are of getting an outcome that more represents the diversity of views across this population. Because we know that there are a lot of really diverse people in the celebrant population who have very, very diverse views about our work. And so all of those people should have their opportunity to, you know, should say what they want to say.
1,000%, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, there's our little rant.
Yeah, that's a little. We'll wrap up the association meeting with just an update because we just have to verbalise it. There's not really an opinion piece to be had. But they had earlier on in COVID, they talked about witnessing Noims over the internet using video conferencing, Zoom, etc. And they mentioned that could be a thing and they were looking into it. And people have been asking us, like, you know, consistently, like, when's it happening? When's it happening? We still don't have a date. As of today, the 31st of October, we don't have a date when you can and then cannot witness Noims online. And B, we don't even know if it will be a thing. It's been, I think the wording was like, it's policy, from a policy point of view, it's been approved, but it has to be legislated. The Attorney General has to say yes. And they have not said yes. And so, it may well be a thing in the future. And when it happens, we'll be sure to tell you about it through the Celebrant Institute. Celebrant Institute members will find out about that first.
Just a reminder that right now, the notice of intended marriage must be signed in the presence of an authorised witness. In the presence of means physical presence, not electronic presence.
Yeah,
so please make sure that you are witnessing your Noims in person, not electronically. Yeah, by the time it actually gets legislated, we won't need it anymore. We needed it in Melbourne in August and September.
The second it's legislated, I'm gonna jump on Zoom for a whole day and just witness every bloody Noim I can. Just get it out the door.
But it'll be it'll be really interesting to see though if it's got caveats because the information that's been coming out all year from the AGD has been it will only be allowed in circumstances where COVID restrictions mean that you can't sign it in person.
Yeah.
And such restrictions don't exist anywhere in the country at the moment.
Yeah, okay, then that's fair. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if there's caveats on it. We just have to wait and see. Anyway. Yeah, cool. Okay, so that's wrapped up about that meeting.
a problem that a lot of celebrants have faced, whether the problem is, can you do this? Or whether the problem is, I want to do this and I don't know how. Or the problem is, like, I've been asked to do this. I don't want to do it, but I don't know what to do about it, is live streaming of ceremonies. Because if this is the first you're hearing, the number of people that can gather at wedding ceremonies has been limited in some capacity this year, whether it's due to travel restrictions or meeting restrictions. Getting people in a room for a wedding ceremony isn't what it was in 2019. So live streaming is a thing that a lot of people talk about. And as the resident nerd at the Celebrant Institute and here at the Celebrant Talk Show, I just wanted to kind of talk about live streaming for a second because I don't see it as something hard because I know all the parameters around it and I can talk about it easily. But where are you at live streaming wise, Sarah? You don't do it. You say get a pro?
No, not now. No, I'm not doing it. I'm like, if you want that, you need to hire a professional. I'm not taking responsibility for that happening or not happening.
Yeah, which honestly is a valid and a good position to hold. And if you hear this and you're like, nah, well, just go to the chapters in the podcast and skip to the next chapter because, you know, like that's – if you don't want to take ownership of the live stream, and even me, I'm a nerd and I sometimes get a bit scared, handing it off to a professional is really good. And what I probably would do is if you've got a bit of a wedding, like a season coming up ahead of you, I would probably find a handful, 1, 2, 3, 4 suppliers that you could recommend that do it well. And talk to them about, you don't have to work a deal. Just say what kind of pricing schedule do you do? And just so you can go, as you're having a meeting with a couple, they ring up live streaming. You're like, I've got 4 options for you. Feel free to find your own options, but these are 4 people I love and, it costs $1,000, whatever it is. So yeah, that's a valid thing. Do that. But if you wanted to at all look at live streaming, I just wanted to kind of hit it on the 2 or 3 angles that are of importance to me. Because there's 2 elements to a live stream, and I feel a lot of people, a lot of normies, if you like, focus on only one of them and not the second one, because the second one's hard. The first one's easy, because we've all got a phone in our pocket. We go, oh, we can get a video of that. And holding an iPhone on your hand for 30 minutes through a ceremony is a terrible way to view any kind of video because it's shaking, it's not still. But also, the audio is generally not that good because the audio in your microphone is picking up the audio around you. So when you're having a chat to the person next to you or the celebrant, also the person holding the iPhone, has a chat, that's getting picked up on the microphone as well as whatever's happening with the celebrant. So there's 2 ways that I do live streaming at my ceremonies. And one of them actually isn't live, but it's my preferred method because good live streaming requires really good internet access. And if there's something that we can always recommend with a wedding venue is there's going to be no bloody internet access. Like, I don't know whether it's part of the Telstra, Vodafone, Optus law that if someone's going to get married somewhere, they just shut down all the towers. We move them away so the 5G doesn't ruin the marriage. there's just never good service at any wedding venue ever. Like, I don't know what it is with wedding venues being in the middle of nowhere and having no reception. So doing live streaming requires really good internet access. Like, we're not talking 1 or 2 bars of 3G. Like, we need all the bars of 4G. We need some good internet access. So if you can get good internet access at the ceremony, here's how I live stream. I've got a Sony A6400 camera. The reason I mention the model is if anyone's interested, I'll just mention models as I go along. The Sony A6400 camera, I've got 3 different lenses for that because I'm a bit of a nerd. It may well be that you look at a Sony RX100, which is probably something I'd recommend because it's got the built-in zoom lens and it's a little bit more affordable.
Sony, I'm just going to interrupt for one moment.
Hit me.
Let's just note that Josh said he is a bit of a nerd.
Bit of a nerd.
He's not a bit of a nerd. He's a massive nerd.
Massive nerd, yeah.
So I just needed to clarify that.
No, I appreciate
everyone.
That. Thank you.
Yeah, moving on. I'm also a massive nerd, but for different things. Yeah, moving on.
Sony camera is what I use. There's plenty of good cameras. You're welcome to research cameras as you like. But the reason I'm using a good camera is because I want to get good video quality. I want it to look good, that when mum's sitting there at home in London or whatever it might be, that she can actually really see it. And it looks and sounds awesome. Sound being the second thing. I don't want the camera on the microphone to be the audio that everyone hears in the live stream. I want the audio in the live stream to be what's happening up at the ceremony with the microphone that I'm holding because that's the best audio in the house. So I personally, I've got a Sennheiser wireless kit with a Sennheiser transmitter and a Sennheiser receiver. And I've got one receiver on my speaker, but another one on my camera. And so that gets the audio straight from the microphone, straight into the camera. Now, here's where things change up, because there's the live or the not-so-live option. Live requires a HDMI out of the camera and into a laptop, which requires a device like a Blackmagic or an Elgato device. And I'm just saying these names so that if anyone's interested, they can note them down. But that'll bring the HDMI video, so the video and the audio from the camera, into the computer. Once it's there, it's like a webcam. So if you're using Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, Facebook Live, YouTube Live, whatever, you can just choose that camera from the drop-down list and send it live to wherever it has to go, like a Facebook group or a Facebook event or whatever. Same with like if you do just a general normal Zoom call like we're doing here, you can select which camera you're going to use if you've got multiple cameras on your computer, which most do, don't. But if you've got one of these HDMI capture devices, it will. It'll show up as another camera that you can choose. So that's how I do live. So live is not that hard, apart from the fact that you need the good camera and the audio, then a laptop, and good internet access. Having a laptop there at the ceremony can sometimes be a little bit much because, you know, it's like having like an office set up at the ceremony. It's a bit much. So that's why the second option is my favorite. I call it quasi-live. Quasi-live is where I do the same setup, camera, lens, microphone, getting the audio, but I just click record. I click record on the camera. It gets the good audio and the video. It looks good. And then I get home to my high-speed NBN, get that file, I top and tail it, which means I just kind of chop it to where the ceremony starts and tail it down, chop it to where the ceremony ends. And I upload that straight to Vimeo and then share it with everyone. And they can just watch it in beautiful quality. Like, you're not relying on live stream dropouts. Like, even if you're watching this on Facebook, I reckon there'd be once or twice where the video or the audio would have just dropped out for a second, because live video and live audio is hard, which is why we release this as a podcast, because on-demand audio and on-demand video, not that hard. You know, we have the technology for that. So as much as everyone wants to do live streaming, I try to encourage them to do my quasi-live, which is me just recording it on my camera on a tripod, and I send them the video a couple of hours after the ceremony. People love that, particularly because a lot of people live in America or the UK, and you know, they don't want to get up at 2 a.m. to watch your ceremony. They'd rather watch it, you know, the next morning when they wake up in good quality. So that's how I do live streaming. Are there any kind of questions kind of jumping out at you, sir?
Just that it reiterates my decision to say hire a professional.
Amen.
And not try to do it myself.
Yeah.
You know, you are good at this stuff and it's something that you enjoy. It's not something I would touch with a 10-foot pole because it would be way too much stress for me. And I've got enough stress with the ceremony and the legals and the music and the whatever else. So that's a perfectly valid response to say, I wouldn't even bring it up. If a couple said to me, we'd like to live stream the ceremony, I'd go, yeah, sure, here's my people. Off you go.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not about to offer to or bring it up with them. We do have in Victoria at the moment, just to let everybody know, at the moment, weddings are restricted to the couple, the celebrant, a photographer, one photographer or videographer, just one, plus 10 guests. Now, religious gatherings, you're allowed to have an additional person who is there to live stream the gathering. And there's
really?
Been nothing, yeah, there's been nothing that's been said about whether or not an additional person to live stream a wedding is allowed. So I know a videographer who was trying to get some more clarity on that last week, but at the moment, the way I see it is the person who's doing the live stream can either be the one included photographer / videographer, or they can be one of the 10 guests. It's not a kind of extra person.
Mind
at
you,
this point.
I'll throw you an extra, like, I don't know, I don't want to start sharing workarounds, but being a live stream, I can imagine that, yeah, so it's a 3 p.m. ceremony, everyone starts arriving, I don't know, 2:30, 2:45, I don't know, 2 p.m., something like, or early, just, they could come set up, bugger off, let the thing run live the whole time, and then, you know, get a text from you, the celebrant, when it's all wrapped up and come back and set it down, I'm guessing.
How many videographer slash streaming people are going to be prepared to leave their equipment under somebody else's supervision.
Yeah. And, you know, it's weird times. Like, I suppose it's times like this that maybe I can imagine forging partnerships with celebrants, photographers, that kind of thing, and just, you know, like, I see, Sarah, you're smart enough that that if someone set everything up and kind of asked you to just kind of, like, take a measure of responsibility for that, like, you could and you would.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like all these, through these times, just like, we've got to use our heads. Just got to switch on a bit.
We do. It's just a, anyway, hopefully wedding numbers will go up again next week or the week after. We'll just wait and see. So live streaming is a thing. It's a thing that more people are getting interested in. If you want to offer it, absolutely go for it. Josh has lots of great tips there, but it is perfectly valid for you to say, I do not do that, and not take responsibility for it. So that's totally fine.
If anyone's interested in seeing or an example of my quasi-live, feel free to reply, send me an email or something like that. Reach out. I'll get you something. It's cool. Final topic for today is I've been doing a social media challenge on the Celebrant Institute. If you're somehow listening to this and you don't know what the Celebrant Institute is, that's a paid membership program that Sarah and I operate. The website is celebrant.institute. And earlier in the year, I run, completely separate to the Celebrant Institute, I ran a program called the 29-Day Challenge, which was about every day for 29 days, because February was a 29-day month, every day for the month of February to post, to receive an email in the morning with a challenge for social media so that you would read the challenge. Hopefully it would be the kind of thing you could digest in a second and just do, and that you would, that you'd be able to be challenged every day, kind of like a boot camp for fitness, that every day you'd be challenged to create a new piece of content for social media, that would hopefully set you in good stead for the year that we had no idea was coming. Gosh. What a year.
How different things were in February.
Gosh, remember February. God. Okay, so I thought, I looked at that and I thought what I did was really good, but I wanted to repurpose it for celebrants only. So I've been rewriting that and republishing it and kind of reworking it so it works a little bit better on the Celebrant Institute. And I just wanted to encourage people to get involved. Every 4 days, so instead of daily, because I know life's weird, so I set it to be every 4 days. Every 4 days you'd receive an email prompt. It'd be on the website, social media, and you get an email that would prompt you on just to, like, in this moment, go and create a piece of content just so you can develop the habit of creating content. And you can see all that on the website, so go and check it out. But I wanted to explain why I think that's important, because I think it's important that, if I was planning on running on politics, or running for politics, like if I was going to, you know, whatever the next election was, I was going to run for it. And if I had a year or two or three notice, today I would start creating content that would tell the story that I want to tell about my local community. Like if I was running, I'm in Palm Beach. If I was running for the Palm Beach elections in 2 years, I would just start blogging, podcasting, and writing about Palm Beach. Palm Beach stories about what's happening in Palm Beach, things that are important in Palm Beach. Expressing some of my more, not extreme views, but my more nuanced views. So not just general, like, how good's Palm Beach, guys? But I believe that the Gold Coast Highway through Palm Beach needs X, Y, and Z. And I've got these strong opinions. Because if you're running for politics, people want to know your opinions. They want to know where your backbone is. So celebrants aren't running for politics, but we are running a race to be, for people to fall in love with us and to hire us to be their celebrant. Content, creating content, sharing stories on social media, on your blog, podcast, video, etc. There's never been a better opportunity for you to share your backbone and to say, I believe in things and I have opinions, I have expert knowledge, I am worthy of your money and your time and of being elected to be the celebrant at your wedding. Hashtag vote Josh Withers for your celebrant. And creating content consistently is the best way to do that, to have a story and a narrative that you're telling about what you believe about weddings, what you believe about funerals, what you believe about naming ceremonies, and for you to share that in a way that people would resonate with that and say, that guy or that person, I need them to be my celebrant. Because when I get married or When I have this event that would encompass a ceremony, I need a person like that at my wedding. And it's no longer about price. It's no longer about availability. It's just, I just need Sarah Ed to be my celebrant, for, like, whatever it takes. And the reason I'm really passionate about that is because I think that that's the, in my opinion, that's the one true way to have happiness in a long-term celebrant business, is just for people just to want to do business with you. Not just with your brand name, not with your email address, and but are you available? I guess, okay, I'll have you as my celebrant. But no, for people just to like love you and just meet you and say, I want Sarah to be my celebrant. Like, I'll move the wedding date, whatever it is, you know. I think that's a real and a true and a beautiful way to operate as a celebrant. And the best vehicle to get to that place is by sharing and creating content. That original content, I would say, would be the greatest void on this planet today. Just new ideas, new stories. That's the biggest void. And the social media challenge is designed to encourage you into that. So that's why I'm doing it. I just wanted to kind of put that out there for the people to get in line with.
Yeah, it's I find creating content really hard, even with the prompts. Like, the prompt comes and it says, like, think of a question that people ask you all the time. And my mind goes blank, just completely blank. So I find it really, really difficult. This week, I've managed to post every day except yesterday. And that's like, that doesn't happen. That I don't remember the last time I ever posted every day in a week. So this is hard. And if you're finding this hard, don't feel alone and don't feel, yeah, don't feel that you should just be able to do this. It's so hard. And so a program like what Josh has put together is just something that gives you ideas about what you can post when you have zero ideas.
Yeah.
So it's pretty valuable from that perspective, but it's hard. And so acknowledge that it's hard and feel okay about that.
Yeah. I want to back that up and say, like, I'm the guy creating the program. I do social media for myself, for my Josh Withers kind of weddings. I've got a personal social media. I've got, and I also look after life skills training and a Celebrant Institute social media accounts. I find it hard. And honestly, if you ask me in the street, are you good at this? I'm like, yeah, I'm really good at this. Like, I would tell you, I'm really good at it. But still, bloody hell, I find it hard just because it's hard. And I don't know, things being hard aren't a good reason to do them. Like, everything's hard. You've just got to choose your hard. which hard, yeah, are you going to do? And the reason I persist with this is because I really do think it's the one true way to just lifelong happiness, you know? Like, if you could ask me, if I could look back on 2020 and what do I think my biggest problem was, it isn't all the normal stuff. It's the fact that we engaged with people who we wouldn't normally engage with in business because we wanted to travel the world and do awesome weddings around the world. And so someone said, we want to book you for Portugal. And like, we're going to be in Portugal. Yeah. And like, normally those were like, they would have never got in contact with us. We would have never took them on. We would have had a conversation and said, I just don't think I'm the right celebrant for you. You know, we're not the right kind of people. But instead, I got excited about travel. And, you know, that's not bad. But, you know, that would be our weakness for this year. That you know, we've got someone doing legal action with us because they think that they're in Brisbane, we're in the Gold Coast, and they think that they deserve a $3,600 refund from the $3,600 fee for a photographer and a celebrant and a bouquet for their elopement in Tuscany. And they're like, you know, we got ripped off. And like, no, you think you're ripped off. There's a pandemic and we're happy to do it locally and I can't give you a refund. And I'm like, that's a really good deal. Like, $3,600 for an elopement in Tuscany for an Australian couple, an Australian photographer and celebrant, spectacular deal, because we didn't charge them for travel because we were already going to be there. And that's a problem with this year. And so the way I would combat that problem is by continuing to persist with telling my story and talking about what I believe in so that people would identify with that and we would forge these long-term relationships with people. Like, I've got people in my Facebook group. I don't know if you ever see them on my comments, Sarah, but they're like, I don't even have a partner yet, but when I do, you're going to be our celebrant. I'm like, yeah. That's me. Like, me doing posts today is me planting seeds in a garden that I'm going to see fruit from for years. And that's the goal.
Absolutely. So good luck.
Thank you.
With your content.
Yeah.
Everyone can do it. It's hard. Acknowledge it. It's fine. But keep trying.
Keep on trying. Keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on.
Sarah, we've definitely talked for a solid amount of time here, and this is going to take me 5 years to edit. So,
It's been a pleasure as always.
Did you appreciate the intro to the last podcast, the Tasmanian one?
Yes, I did think that was a bit hilarious because that was not meant to be in the podcast. If anybody hasn't listened to it yet, I interviewed a Tasmanian celebrant, and before the podcast started, I said, so I'm recording this on Zoom, and when it's finished, I'm going to send the audio to Josh and he's going to magic it and like make it go online as a podcast. And of course, I left that in when I sent it to Josh because I just sent him the whole file, and he thought that maybe it would be good to include that.
Because it'd be hilarious.
In the actual podcast. It is quite hilarious. He does magic it. I don't understand, and that's okay because I have other strengths.
Sarah, yes. One important thing to wrap up the podcast on. I put it out on Facebook, on the Celebrant Institute social media and Instagram the other day. The notice of intended marriage, which is the form we need to complete before 1 month before, the abbreviation. So, first of all, what's your preferred spelling of the abbreviation and pronunciation?
Noim. N-O-I-M. That is my preference.
Was it a little bit of nasal in there? Was that
Noim?
Noim.
Noim. Noim.
Little bit Kath and Kim. Little bit Kath and Kim. I am a Noim girl.
I'm team Noim as well. I'm team Noim.
Yeah. There were a lot of people on that post who were either team Nim or team Nom, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
You know what's embarrassing?
And one who said that she spells it Noim, but she pronounces it Nom, which I also thought that was awesome and hilarious.
It's just, it must be embarrassing to be so wrong publicly for those people.
Stop that. I did send Josh a text and say, who knew that our most engaged with post this year, or even in fact probably ever since we've been running the Celebrant Institute, would be about Noim versus Nom versus Nim.
Yeah, didn't know that at all.
These are the big discussions that we are hosting at the Celebrant Institute.
I need to apologize for the storm that is brewing around me. Literally, I've received text messages from my car insurer, my house insurer, saying, buckle down, shit's getting real.
We better get off the interwebs because you're not supposed to be on the phone or the interwebs when there's a thunderstorm. Oh,
thanks,
so,
Grandma.
So we better get off.
I also do apologize. I feel like my beautiful 2-year-old toddler may have cried at various points through the podcast. If that happened, I hope you enjoyed that.
It's fine. I didn't notice, so it's all good.
Sarah, it's always good to chat with you. For those of you that are listening to this for the first time, you can find more episodes at celebrant.fm. That's the podcast website. This is the Celebrant Talk Show. Sarah and I have got the Celebrant Institute, which is the membership program. $10 a month. It's a great deal for what we do on there. So go and check that out, celebrant.institute. If you've got questions, topics, thoughts, opinions, the email address for this is hello@celebrant.fm. And if you want to follow us on social media, it's @celebrant.institute. And of course, you can find Sarah and I both online on all of the things. You are Sarah Ed, Civil Celebrant.
I am.
And I am Hello Josh Withers. So come check it out. Say hi. Sarah, have an awesome day.
Have fun. Thanks so much. Okay, bye.